Da built-in foy.
A crude door of 20 to 30 had already begun to gather in the thickening darkness around the black mound of the Everbuster bonfire when Hackie and Martha arrived. Ertie had bigged it on a knoll just north of the houses, and was still piling on anything it could burn, half-rotted piece of driftwood, all thick for roofs, heavy scumpies for the pit stack. As he moved around, adding the final touches to his handiwork, he was followed by a group of youngsters, clamoring to know when he was going to light up. "It's dark in yoch noo. Can you no set low till him?" came an eager voice. "Nah, my boy, he's no just fairly ready yet," Ertie replied, weighing his words with the care of a connoisseur. He licked bairns, and tasing them to frustration was his way of giving an edge to their enjoyment. He carefully placed the muckle scumpy on the top, then stepped back to survey the effect. The young un sensed the time had come, and waited tensely his confirmation. "No, Dan," he said, relishing the moment. "I think he's ready now." There was a pause. Then with a tantalizing tilt of his head, he said, "He's that bonny. It's a pity we had to burn him." "Oh, no," wailed the youngsters, and Ertie laughed. "Yea, we'll likely had to burn him right enough. Just you wait here till I get a light." He hurried off to the house to reappear shortly, carrying a lowing pit and a pair of tongs. The bairns cheered as the chunky, bow-legged figure approached, spunk spraying for the fiery brand into the darkness. He set the brand to the wider side of the bonfire, and the young man shouted, "Watch the whiskers, Ertie!" Soon the flame began to lick upwards, and within moments the bonfire was ablaze, lighting up the rim of faces around it. As Hackie watched, he felt himself being gripped by a powerful sensation. The rage of the fire flinging back the shadows, the lit faces round the edge of the dark, the feeling of some gathering of strange forces, all held him rapt. An excited Hackie by his side jerked his mind out of its blankness. It was Hansie, eyes gleaming in the firelight. "Is that no a brave fire?" he said, and rattled on. "After he's brunt doon a bit, does the king put we ought to do?" "No," Hackie replied blankly. "Jump right over the height of him. Do mind's last year we jump over in at the sides, but this time I'm going to loop clean over the middle. It's the game." "Does to think we'd manage it?" Hackie said. "He's a brave muckle fire." "Of course we will, and..." lowering his voice, "just to kind us. Script and some of the Headlibuster boys are here. We'll show them who can jump the best." Hackie was all attention. "Is Script really here? Whereabouts?" "Looks do," said Hansie. "Over yonder with the Thompson boys for soon." "I dunna ken what's putting them here the night," Hackie said. "Looking for trouble, nae doubt." "And see it do keeps out of trouble," and interjected Martha, who had been standing quietly by. "Anyway," she continued, "I'm going over to speak with the graving lasses. Look after the cell now." "Of course I will," muttered Hackie, annoyance in his voice. "Never later, Hackie," said Hansie. "This lasses are a' the same." They moved over to reconnoiter. The youngsters were mulling around the fire, making brave swoops towards it, then retreating with scuttles of excitement when threatened with flying spunks. The older folk stood and spake, occasionally warning the bairns to watch themselves. As the blaze dwindled, some of the more daring of the boys began jumping across the fringes of the flames. Looping the belt on fire was considered an achievement and an assurance of luck. Even feathers jumped with young bairns in their arms. The bigger boys and young men circled the fire, weighing up their tactics. The clear at centre was a mark of physical prowess, a much-prized honour. There was a concentration of activities at the weather side. "Looks to," said Hansie, "Skirt is getting ready to hear go." Skirt, tall and spindly, and being urged on by a group of Piri boys, was preparing himself for a jump. He stood clear aboon the others, and was making the most of the attention he was receiving. "Get yon Piri boy out of the road," he shouted. Dan, when the way was clear, made his round. Arms treasured and head held back, he raced for the glowing crest of the blaze, but at the last moment angled his jump so that he cleared the shooter. A mutter of disappointment came for his sooth weasel friends. "What's wrong with his script?" Hansie shouted. "Fair to get the tail brunt?" Script ignored the taunt, and head down walked back to his friends. One of them jeered. "Thy sheik's as bigger as thy bricks," Hansie said. "Why dost do no loop to fire?" The challenge was taken up by a group of Piri boys for the upper weasel. "Yes, Hansie, come on, do show them." Hansie glanced at Hockey, a glint of devilment in his eye. "Here go," Hockey said, "and I'll follow thee." Hansie threw a defiant look across at Skirt and his friends. Then we fists clenched and head down, ran for the fire. Hockey held his breath as he raced forward. Just as Hansie was gathering himself for the spring, a piece of burning wood slipped with as sure as sparks and fell in his path. A gasp came for the crowd, and Hockey stiffened as he saw Hansie desperately trying to check his stride. He slew to the left, missed the fallen brand, but the impetus of the run took his revelant feet through the edge of the fire. The crowd fell silent, and as Hansie walked back, limping slightly, Skrit's voice chanted, "Coordy, coordy, clammy nail, I'm a man and do's a snail." Hockey stepped forward to meet Hansie, hunched and disconsolate. "Never do late, Hansie. Thou couldna help it. Wait do here, and I'll shade him." As he moved a few feet back to get a better run up, a voice for the sooth weasel crowd chanted, "Hockey hunter, clock and dunter, laid his eggs in the heart to winter." The chant was taken up by the others, a chant Skrit had often taunted them with at school. Hockey felt a black fury rising within him. A blur of memories came flooding back of Skrit bloody in his nose and the thick trickle in the back of his throat, of Skrit jabbing him in the behind with a pin so that he shouted involuntarily and got the tires for the teacher, of many other insults and humiliations. He braced himself. He would shad him, not just for his own sake, but for the upper weasel boys. "Go on, Hockey," Hansie urged. "Do can do it." He began his run, and as he started, something inside him told him he could do it. The glowing mound no longer daunted. He raced towards it, every muscle tense for the leap. He reached the charred fringe, gathered himself for the spring, then launched into the air, straight for the crest of the fire. He felt the wafts of hot air around him, the smoke in his in and trot, and then the dunt to his feet on the ground. He stumbled, but kept his feet, and for all around rose the cheers. His whole being was at such a stretch of excitement that he walked back in a daze, barely aware of the buzz around him. Hansie came to meet him, feet fairly dancing off the earth in his glee. "Boy, Hockey, do fairly clear them." The Piri boys were all around him, faces raised in admiration. Skrit and his cronies turned their backs, sniggering over some secret joke. Hockey looked to his left, and for a moment in the flickering firelight, his een catched Jessie looking across at him. She smiled as their een met, and in the instant he turned away, blit but warm in the knowledge of her approval. Several others looped the fire, but only twa mair cleared it at its height. Gibby Anderson fi Cargart, a 19-year-old Faroe fisherman, and Lowry Tate, Hansie's cousin, noted for his strength and dexterity. As it burned lower, the youngins began jumping, and as they jumped, their spirits soared to a pitch of excitement and mischief-making. There was teasing and name-calling, especially between the boys of Upper and Sooth Weasel. Hucky and Hansie were drawn to a cluster of scarlet bairns. It turned out to be Mad Mary Luttett who was the object of their attentions. Mary, one of the quarter poors, had stravagged at the parish, seeking shelter in buttane, barn, or wherever folk could find a place for her to lay her head. Young poor wandering bodies moved in a strange kind of limbo on the fringe of the community. Often eccentric, sometimes demented, they carried around with their rags a robe of mystery. Mad Mary, with her violent outbursts, was in the bairns feared, and it was only in numbers that they gained confidence to face her. Her man had been press-ganged soon after their marriage, and she had given birth to a stillborn bairn 3 months later. That had turned her mind, and now she wandered the parish from house to house, carrying with her a burden of oaths, maledictions, and strange utterances. She now stood in the midst of a bedlam of boys, a tall, raw-boned wife with an old, battered kishy on her back. Deep-chested and broad of beam, her ample contours were enlarged with layers of tattered skirts. She wore a battered felt hat under a black shawl. The bairns chanted, "Mary, Mary, head of canary, up the leg o'er drawers." As they chanted, her body crouched and she raised a threatening staff. The chant was repeated, a hunt of fear lending it a shriller note. The chant came again, louder and shriller, but they just got the first line out when Erty broke through the ring and rounded on Mary's tormentors. "Off with you, you whelps that you are, and leave Mary alone." It was said in a firm, controlled voice, but with an age of anger had quelled the bairns. As they melted away into the darkness, Mary moved slowly over to the fire. She turned her back to the now smouldering embers, drew herself to her height, and with a defiant shake of the staff, shouted into the night, "The curse of the maiden is sicker and sair, but the curse of the widow is 10 times mair." The words, coming from the dark figure silhouetted against the dying embers, sent a shiver through Hucky. She lowered the staff, leaned her weight upon it, and, peering into the darkness, said in a low, thick voice, "There's some of you the night that'll neither hae fire or hoose by another belton." The words hung in the silence that had fallen on everyone. Nobody moved, then Erty got over to Mary. "Come awa inside, Mary," he said, "and doosel hae something of thy mouth as well as the rest." She mumbled something, and we a glower round those remaining set off wi Erty for the hoose. Hucky looked at Hansie, and was tempted to laugh off the eerie feeling Mary had cast over him, but Hansie was in first. "Mary is in the right thirst the night. I doubt Uncle Erty'll hit a put sad upon her tail." Hucky smiled. Hansie had a light glancing way of dismissing difficult moments. They had it done for the ever-best of dwellings and the beginnings of the foy.